Are there any questions so far? It's really the most important part of the retreat. And it might be nearly impossible to ask from back there, but the invitation is, I hope, can be bigger than your hesitation. Yes.
Yes.
You have a question?
While walking, I'm very used to with the feet touching the ground, or the sensations around the feet, or the sensations around the whole body.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel that I would like to get to know better the feeling of the belly.
Mm-hmm.
But it feels like I don't know where to stop.
Mm-hmm. Good. Could everyone hear the question? Excuse me. Could you hear the question? No? Okay. So she's heard me mention a few times, and I think Batelji also mentioned the lower belly. And in walking, she's easily feeling sensations in her feet and in the whole body. But she's also now interested in similarly connecting to the lower belly and doesn't know where to start. Yeah? So that's a perfect description of where to start. Really. Knowing that you don't know how is a great place to start. And not only that, knowing that you don't know how, but you have some other experience to go on. And when you first started doing walking meditation, maybe it was easy to feel sensation in the feet because there's so many and they're so easy to feel, and it goes along with the movement really exactly. And but there's some interest in going somewhere that's not easy to go. And that's all you need. And what that means is that you have your permission not to know how to do it and to be interested in. And so then, if there's anything to go on, let that be enough. If there's a little bit of warmth, if there's a little bit of you can feel your clothing here, or if it's something inside and you don't know what it is, it will be easier to space out when it's not as much to pay attention to. So that's something that we accept as part of the practice. If it were easy from the beginning, we wouldn't need to practice. We would just do it once and we would do it, and that's all. And this is not what we're here for. So practice means exactly, I don't know how, I'm interested. And is there something to go on? And still in this case with the lower belly, having in the back of the mind or on the side, Jaya suggested that I go to the belly. That's all. Not that I should and that I have to, and maybe it's not for you. Also. Which I also said. So keep that as well. But enough interest to feel foolish and that there's more distraction spacing out. And sometimes the spacing out is that you go to your feet. That's a funny one. When it's easy to do one thing that we could call meditation, but we're interested at somewhere else, something more subtle and hard to track. We don't know how. Partly because we would like to know how, because we feel that's what we should know how, and then we have the right to be confident. If we know how, we think. So this is confidence without any reason, purely because it might be possible. And not knowing how is a great starting point. And it's great because the text that I wanted to bring into the teachings today is the Tao Te Ching, which is a text from China. That's a question and answer between two people, like most of the great texts that we have. So again, it's a great text, and it's just a conversation between two guys a long time ago somewhere on the planet. It has its limitations. But in that text, the Tao Te Ching, one of the good lines that I love is, when people know that they don't know, then they can find their way. So that means when we know that we don't know, then we can find our way. And it partly means it's not that there is that one way that we've got to find. It's a way that gets invented as we go along. And then it's not invented like pretending and out of nowhere we try to make magic, but out of nowhere something does come that we follow. It also happens in such an organic, natural process that it's hard to notice that I'm now more connected to my belly 3 days later. It happens so naturally because also then my interest starts to get more refined. Either now I'm interested in that particular place in my belly, or I've gone from belly to chest, or it has gone from belly to chest, whatever. But we're not, it's beautiful that we're not interested in saying how great I am that in 3 days I got connection to belly, like Jaya told me to. There's a natural, ongoing, I could say confluence of what we put into practice and where that open-ended interest is going that we can follow through on. So, like one of the big challenges of this deep rest retreat is to rest. It's a big challenge. A lot of you will go against you as you let yourself rest. You will say awful things to yourself and to me in your mind as you rest. And just keep resting. Also in the Tao Te Ching, there's a description often of a teacher called the master. It's translated as the master or masters. And I would like to call that life as a teacher today. It's not what the text is saying. The text is talking about a person who's a teacher, but life also does the same thing. So life shows us how to forget what we know. And also how to forget what we want. So nobody can push us around. We could almost say better, nothing can push us around. That means we're free in any situation. If you think you've got all the answers, he or life, it will mess with your head, is the translation. Stop doing stuff all the time and watch what happens. So that's the kind of, okay, now here we are on a deep rest retreat. I'd like to talk about the two ingredients today. Is the sound fine? Not so fine, yeah. It's just the placement of the microphone. I haven't got it quite right, I think. Also, because I use my hands now so much, like a Mediterranean. Okay. Is that better? Yeah? Okay. Please feel free to signal me, because I'm more used to moving around. Was there any other question or anything to comment or share? So this is just for today, and in the spirit of the Tao Te Ching, which says that words really have nothing to do with what's true, here are some words. The two ingredients, steadiness and kindness, kindness and steadiness. So depending on your past, your character, steadiness might be easier or kindness might be easier. And it doesn't matter. And also, kindness coming easily or steadiness coming easily isn't always a good sign. So we can't sort of get stuck anywhere of thinking, well, I've got enough kindness so I can be not worry about the steadiness or whatever. So, for example, steadiness, sometimes for people, if there has been a shock in their life, which to some extent is the case for everyone, but when sometimes there's been a big shock for someone, the mind goes one-pointed and gets very good at being one-pointed. And so practicing one-pointedness is of no use whatsoever if one wants to be free. Similarly, sometimes when there's been some kind of problem or not getting what was needed, then a display of kindness or an outpouring of kindness is the reaction as a way of trying to be safe, basically. And so sometimes people are really, really nice and it's terrible. But still, in this moment, kindness and steadiness are both pretty easy. For one moment, it's pretty easy to find one or the other or both. So even if there's a lot of thinking, noticing that there's a lot of thinking is a kind of steadiness. Letting ourselves be okay with the fact that there's a lot of thinking is a form of kindness. So whatever is happening in any one moment, it's not far. The two ingredients are not far. But it's even much more easy to forget both the ingredients. One of the main ways of forgetting, especially on a meditation retreat, is that we're so busy trying to be kind and steady. And maybe we're putting some pressure to be kind and steady. And so then we work with our idea of kind and steady. And we've lost track of kind and steady. We've lost track of our natural capacity for opening the way for kind and steady to happen. So kindness and steadiness are happenings. Still not quite right. That are easy to do and easy to forget. Easy to allow to come through and easy to not allow to come through. And so, in a way, at first, it makes the beginning of practice potentially easy and exciting. Because it's not far to come across to allow a moment of kindness or steadiness. And wow, a moment of kindness or steadiness. Cool. And we're more allowing of all the moments of neglect. Also, we don't have the equipment ready to notice all those moments of forgetting kindness and steadiness. Kindness and steadiness as aspects of what we really are deeply, of what life is about, or what we really are. So as we start to notice more, if in the beginning we were very hard on ourselves, we start to notice more moments of kindness and steadiness. It's not impossible. If it was exciting in the beginning that there was a moment of kindness or steadiness, we start to notice all the moments that aren't. And they're not necessarily, is it not kind? Was that? And then we get to, and this is very fun. It can be very fun if we realize it can be very fun to question, what is kindness? And what is steadiness? Stability, calm. Where does it come from? When it's not me putting it on. So of course, we get to question, is nice kind? And no, obviously. It becomes obvious that being nice does not equal being kind. It becomes obvious that repressing ups and downs is not steady. And instead of that being a terrible realization, let it be fun. Let it be fun to question, to activate the natural question mark. We get to question the ideas. So then we start to notice the ideas have been acting like the police. They have been given, they have been empowered to act as the authority. How did that happen? Everybody got involved. So we don't need to spend too much time blaming ourselves or our parents or society, because everybody got involved in that, gets involved in that. The disempowerment of aliveness and the empowerment of idea. Belief, certainty, should, shouldn't, right, wrong, ideology. So as a mother with young kids and so many ideas coming in, not having lived in a very connected way, society where I saw lots of kids growing up, I didn't see lots of kids growing up at close hand. So I read a lot of books and I tried different things. And I noticed when I was putting, I called it the ideological butter on the bread, because I had the idea that butter is good. Organic butter. Only. The more yellow, the better. Not from the dye, but from the grass, etc. The ideas also get more and more refined. That's called getting cranky and getting uptight and getting oversensitive. So I would still put the extra butter that I would never put on my own bread. Oh, I don't really like butter that much. I'd still put it on, but I'd be thinking or saying, this is the ideological butter. Do you know what that means? Okay, yeah? Or what does it mean? I'm doing it because I think I should. I'm doing it only because I think I should. Because I heard a few different things that came together into butter is good for my son, for the development of his brain, those fats. I don't want to say too much because then I'm passing on a virus about the ideology of butter, which may or may not be true. Let alone when we look into, is it really organic and all of that? Everywhere we look. So sometimes it's helpful, depending on the person, to ask questions in a more mental way, but I'm not so much talking about that. I'm talking about a kind of spirit of openness, a spirit of questioning, rather than a mental energy of questioning. And that will take experience to know the difference. So if you don't have experience noticing, you won't know what I mean. And that's totally fine. But I'm just letting you know in advance. Don't stay only with mental questioning because Jaya, so ideological mental questioning, because Jaya said I should. So it's a spirit of questioning, a space of openness where it could occur to me to wonder if I need to put that much butter on the bread or if I need to buy that much butter this week or if the fact that they're out of butter or whatever. Because we only go shopping once a week. We live really far away from the shop. Sometimes it's not even needed to actually ask the verbal question, thank goodness. Because there are so many things that are ready to be questioned. So many fixed ideas that are dominant, that are telling you what to do, and you're doing it. Often, of course, they go against each other. And we wonder what's wrong with us, or what's wrong with so-and-so. And we forget to ask the basic question of, what's the assumption or idea that's making this into a problem? So sometimes, even without going through any mental process whatsoever, we start to have access to another way. To be led. Something that's worth following. Sometimes what's worth following, what's worth having as a guide, I'd rather say what's worth following because it's not a thing that we can track down and tie ourselves onto and get dragged by. It's a non-thing that comes exactly out of nowhere. So sometimes the process of coming to knowing that we don't know might involve questions in words. And sometimes we might just find that there's something better than knowing that's moving towards the butter and the bread. Sometimes it happens with life circumstances. We get to the store and there isn't butter. And it's not even worth asking the question, is this a problem? Because it isn't. It's just butter. But that kind of giving up the fight moment when the life circumstance helps us notice that it's not that important. And maybe we can drop the ideology. And maybe we'll just know if to put butter or not, how much butter to put, etc. Maybe we'll just do it, and we'll never know. Sometimes life circumstances, in the Tao Te Ching, life shows us how to forget what we know. Sometimes by just showing us that we're on a dead end track. And eventually the dead end will come, if we're lucky. It's a hard day, but it's a good day. When I've been ideologically buttering, or you've been ideologically sitting, and you get to the dead end. It's a hard day, because you put so much energy into that kind of sitting. Or that kind of buttering. But it's only a hard day if you're willing to take it that way. that your idea is more important than your sanity. So it's usually a hard day because we've been practicing all our lives that the idea is of the utmost importance. The idea is more important than my sanity, than my peace and kindness, steadiness and kindness. Life shows us how to forget what we know and what we want. So this add-on here is a little trickier than it sounds and a little more simple than it sounds also. It's more tricky and more simple than it sounds. Life shows us how to forget what we know, comma, like slight pause. So it's something different is happening. And life shows us how to forget what we want. Life shows us how to forget what we know and what we want. The next sentence, so nobody can push you around, what it really means in the context of the language of today, is that we find ourselves resting and loyal to the uprising, happening quality of peace, steadiness, and kindness, our sanity, and being disloyal to idea. It means nobody can push you around. But why nobody can push us around is that something in us enough times found out that the whole fight was around an idea that may or may not be true. And just having a little question or a little openness, we found ourselves dropping somewhere with the help sometimes of life circumstances saying there's no more butter, or because of that car accident or whatever, you can't sit anymore. Are you going to give up meditation because you can't sit? This is how the whole lying down revolution started. Someone loved meditation. For him, meditation meant sitting. Something happened physically, luckily not a car accident. It wasn't that severe, but it meant that he couldn't sit. And we had this conversation in Ladakh 14 years ago in the meditation hall whispering. I couldn't believe. Therefore, you can't meditate? Because you can't sit, you can't meditate? What are you saying? You love meditation. Not even in a chair, much less lying down. So this is a great example of where an idea is making friction that eventually will help us question the ideology and come back to our sanity, steadiness, and kindness. Our sanity is our natural openness that allows the happening of kindness and steadiness to come through. We're not pretending to be calm. We're not pretending to be nice. Are there any questions so far? Yes, but you don't want to say them? Okay.
I have a question.
Yes, thank you.
Like, I feel with myself within this whole process of practicing that I gradually noticing, I'm like stopping and I'm like, oh, that was an idea also. And I thought it was.
Mm-hmm. Great. Yeah.
So, like, it can be a little bit frustrating.
Let it be fun. So, Michal, yeah, is your name? Michalji is saying that, I often add this syllable G to the end of names because I've been in India so long, it's like, is there anything similar in Hebrew? Huh. It's like, beloved Michal, something like that. It's like what?
Sometimes they say, like, from, I think from Yiddish, you add, like, love. It's like an affectionate...
Loving respect, affectionate respect. The life in me that's not only me is connecting to the life in you that's not only you. G is life. So, yeah. Jivan, Jiv. It's just, yeah. It's not a cult where everyone's required to start saying G, but it just comes out of my mouth. We require other things, no. So Michal G is saying she notices many times, even with a lot of little things, yeah? Is that what you said? That she realizes something was an idea, and she'd never noticed even that it was an idea until that moment. Is that what you said? And she said it's frustrating, and I said, let it be fun. That's exactly what I'm saying. Let it be fun. In every little aspect of our lives, the training is very thorough. That's why I used this kind of ridiculous example of the ideological butter, that I can laugh at myself as I'm doing it. So why is it frustrating instead of fun? Because we think that we should have already known that it was an idea. How could we have known it was an idea? We're so well indoctrinated. It's so compelling. And there is also built into the moment, there is maybe a little bit of heat, but there is something of the opening and the lightness that we could enjoy. It's not just like, okay, let me try to enjoy it. It's about my own self-image, why it's frustrating. That another idea, I think I should have already known that, because I should know everything. And also, we can already start to feel here, why should I know everything? Because knowing, I'm like trying to get around the microphone. I'm trying to get closer to you by going around the other side of the microphone. Our idea is that knowing will be safe. And we eventually agreed for safety, that okay, we'll be safe. Instead of that part of us that actually knows there isn't any safety. Fundamentally, there isn't. Relative safety is necessary, obviously. But fundamentally, there isn't safety. And fundamentally in us, and I'm deliberately and naturally pointing to my belly because that's a good place for me to connect to that. There is in me and in you a place that has a natural appreciation of that freedom that involves an acceptance of non-safety. It doesn't say, okay, let's all be into danger. It's saying, apart from the fact that there's not safety, alongside that fact, there is freedom. There is something that's not limitable. And that's who I am. So from that perspective, there's a sense of, another idea discovered. That little bit of relative freedom. So even though we discover the idea, doesn't mean that it loses its hold or we lose our interest in it. But at least now I know that there is that assumption in there that I should know, for example. I should have already known that that's an idea. What do you say?
I was just thinking that to eventually, mm-hmm. I would know, okay, like, this is it. Or like a kind of a guarantee, like maybe really felt guarantee, but that, you know, that
yeah.
I'm not going to find out that it's actually the opposite.
Yeah, okay. This is very, very interesting ground, so to say. So first I try to repeat what Michalji said. She said it's frustrating because she really hopes that at some point there will be a place of safety. Yeah? At some point she will fall into, where you can relax. Yeah? So how it actually is better and worse than that. The little moment of discovery, oh, that's an idea, is the place of relatively safety, which is home, which is boundless. And why it's hard is that we've set ourselves up with this expectation because our starting point is not the right starting point. But she used the word expectation. I expect. So we enter into a negotiation with life. We're going to lose. Life would give it freely. But not one, we don't think we can go that big. And so we try from a small place to make a deal with life. I'm willing to work really hard, for example. I'm willing to give everything, even. We'll say. Whether we really do is another thing, but anyway. We might say, we might even really feel, I will give everything. If you promise me that at the end, I'm going to feel safe. Or I'm going to be able to, And what's true is that already there can be ah, and that is actually the practice, is ah. And again, ah, and ah, and ah, and ah. Now, already, with no condition. And that's a different, if we can call it relationship to life, it's not quite a great way to say it, but for now, it's a quite different relationship to life. Instead of trying to say, okay, I'll do something big so that you'll give me that I want. Because we mistake our longing for that, that gets woven together with fear and desire for safety. And so we find ourselves being motivated by fear and a desire for safety when actually woven in there is also a kind of wildness and openness, a kind of magical childlikeness, innocence, that's ready for anything and knows that somewhere deeply is okayness no matter what, is already okay, is already, and would love safety, sure, but not at the price of what's more important than safety. And not from a place of fear. So it's really important to notice many, many times we've come to the meditation hall for the same reason that we would go to work to make money because we're afraid. We could go to work for a different reason. We can come here for a different reason, not from fear. Fear is welcome to visit, but not letting that be in the driver's seat with the map as well. And what's also hard is it's pretty wordless. The childlike part that's ready for anything and loves openness and is all about freedom and already ah. And from ah, then what steps happen in the practice? What steps happen at work? It's not that we don't practice or don't go to work. And we are there actually willing to do whatever is needed, not as an ideology. Our resources are available for whatever needs to happen, it can happen gradually. not by forcing. It's radically different. We all have somewhere in this lifetime, and if there's more than that, I don't know, but maybe there is. But we do have access to our own experience of the fact that there is a whole other way of living. We just have very little experience with it. And it's very wordless, and we're so used to words being the way that we figure out what we're going to do and why and how and so on. And so we it's harder to feel how kindness and steadiness would come through naturally and by themselves. It's harder to feel because it's ungraspable. It's a happening. It's not out of a negotiation, I do this and I get that. But we've all experienced it. And so part of what happens while resting is that those experiences will start to come back to you. And at first you'll think, oh, no, that's not. I'm distracted thinking about that time when I was a child. Happy or playing or serious or whatever. Or even a daydream or a night dream starts to come back. Because we're starting to settle into the places in us that can feel what's important, what it tastes like, what it feels like, how open it is, how reliable it is, actually, though it comes consistently out of nowhere and is unpredictable, it's also reliable. So what I'm talking about, what needs to happen next in the meditation, in the small scale and the big scale. Not that I have to think it through and worry, oh, did I get it right? But already, and from whatever amount of or remembering from there, what happens? When we know we don't know, when people know they don't know, when we know we are people we don't know, we can find our way. We can find our way, not figure it out, not know what it's going to look like. So life shows us how to forget what we know and what we want. And here the translation, so nobody can push you around. My translation may be, so we stay true to openness, where steadiness and kindness come through, where sanity is available, sanity happens. No matter what. So I'm not talking about in all of those easy, moderate situations, but in every situation. Our sensing of how good and important the openness that allows kindness and steadiness to come through is, how that's our precious life. And to leave our precious life to go and be into an ideology, even if it's really right, we leave our life to go be ideological, doesn't make sense. And we start to feel ourselves making that movement, and we start to realize, oh, that's an idea. And we feel a bit humiliated that we didn't realize. We feel ashamed that I didn't realize for however many years you've lived that that's an idea. But we can start to then also uncover that that aha moment is aha. It's, it can be shocking. And it can be hard to bear what that actually, it can be an earthquake. Or it can be more like, thank goodness I don't have to do that anymore. But again, even if it's an earthquake, we might easily leave our lives to be worried about how am I going to fit this all together again, this shattered life plan. And something in us is willing to stay true to not thinking, or not thinking that the thinking knows anything. And that there is a kind of sweet, unknowing knowing that we can start to access. Or if you would like better, maybe nonverbal knowing. Uncontrolled and nonverbal knowing. So forgetting what we want, this is a major threat, this statement. It's a major threat to our whole project, our whole life project. Because what I want is what I think my life is about or should be about. And when I don't get what I want, what am I doing wrong? Etc. To forget what I want, we think would mean to lose all my energy and my aliveness and my uniqueness. What makes my life alive, we think. But if we go into and investigate in a feeling experiential way, what is the experience of wanting? The experience of wanting is taking it as real that I'm not enough as I am, that it's not already okay. Taking it as real, this sense of gotta improve something and gotta be busy. And gotta make some kind of deal with life from a small place. Okay, I'll do this if you give me that. That's what wanting is when the smallness is in charge. And we're following the smallness. Everything. We and our coworkers and our children and our neighbors, and we drag everyone along into that mess. Into that inevitable conflict. So we can start to notice when there's that feeling of wanting to fix something, and then we start to notice that came from a feeling that this is a problem, and then we can start to notice this is a problem only because I expected something. I assumed something. I believed something. And then actually the problem, if there's a problem, is the belief, the way that that idea is working in the situation. Even the idea itself is not a problem and may be true or right, etc. But it's not going to give the results that we would want. Maybe it's an idea that peace is a good thing. We should have peace on the planet. Agreed. But from that place, peaceful will not happen. There's not the openness to let peace come. There's not the trusting that peace comes. It comes through openness, not through a deal. It doesn't come on demand. It doesn't come like a dog. And so that's the main difference, is a kind of remembering that we do actually trust. It's not trying to trust. We remember that we have and we do. We also don't, but we also do. And that means trusting that what's important for this person called me, whether I want it or not, can come, can happen. That life's on my side here. And we can work with anything. No matter who tries to push us around. Stop doing stuff all the time and watch what happens. Lao Tzu says. So kindness and steadiness are natural human qualities that can come through when there's some openness. And the kindness and steadiness allow more openness. That allows more kindness and steadiness to come through. And it's very rich and very worthwhile. Really heartfelt encouragement not to give up when it will indeed seem completely impossible for you. And you'll think everybody else has it and you don't, and all of that. Crap. We know from our own experience, for example, there's something called in a way of working that's kind of psychological called family constellations. I won't go into what it's about, but in case you know it, you'll be smiling that I mention it. And in that, they notice that there's two kinds of love, blind love that's coming from the small in the driver's seat, the small making a deal. Where maybe children take on the parents' pain, for example, and it doesn't help anybody. And then there's where love is free. And that's such a better deal than doing this, even if it's giving your whole life to get whatever it is. Because with the free love, and you felt this, so maybe it's a different word for you, generosity or clarity. Actually, any of the natural human qualities, as I said, they come through, and then that helps it come through more. So when love happens, there's a happening of love. It comes through. The response is to give more back. So one goes through and two comes back, and then four comes back, and then eight comes back, and it's not one for one. At some point, we usually forget how easy that is, and we lose track, and it stops going. But the feeling of that, when you've really received, or you gave, not even realizing you were giving, love came through, and it wasn't you loving. It just happened. Or you wouldn't even call it love. But it looked like love. And then what happened next was more than that. Partly because you didn't expect it, but partly because it was more than that. So this really helps us, and starting as our own experiences of resting into our natural fluidity, where the two ingredients come from. We start to really get the relative importance of the little things. The relative importance of the little things. So whether it's in your body posture, in the meditation retreat, that you do take the trouble to experiment with putting a pillow under your knee, or putting something under the heels. Or what if you take the pillow out from under your head? You had this idea that you should have a pillow under your head, but actually something just wants to take the pillow out. It's relatively important because it does make a difference. It can make a significant difference. But it's only relatively important. It's also not a big deal. It's not then that kind of thing where the whole meditation you're trying to find that next clue of, what if I move my elbow a little bit higher? Maybe I'll... And that really starts to help thinking come into its helpful place. We start to actually have experiences of helpful thinking. It's really wonderful. And we remember moments that thinking was helpful. And we can really start to get the experience in our system. So we're not having to fearfully keep track of it. And what was that? And write it down. But we feel it in the system, and it stays with us. The difference in the feeling, in the body and in the mind, in the energy. When thinking is helpful, the rare time, it is rare. We don't need to think so much. But when it's helpful, it's so helpful. And it often does have its timing. It comes up, and now's the time to go do that thing. Do it. Maybe wait till the bell rings, if you're in the hall. And then go do it. And sometimes the feedback comes of, oh, how good that you did that. How important. How relatively important. Made a difference. And sometimes there's no feedback, which is great, because we don't want to then start secretly looking for that feedback and again be caught into that small making a deal thing of, I'll follow through on the thought that comes, so then I get the confirmation and then I can be okay. No, already okay. Ah, and then what happens? And then we find ourselves willing to let sometimes problems not be problems. We find out that it wasn't a problem after all. Or we find out that it is a problem and there's nothing we can do about it. And that's okay. Or we find out that it is a problem and there is an easy solution. And it's finished. And that's, and we're like, but how can I live without that problem? And sometimes there is a relative problem that's relatively important. And it has a really painful solution. And we find ourselves also following through. It's possible. With help, usually, at least unseen help is there, but sometimes we get people around us who can help, even when it's really hard. So remembering to forget what you know and what you want, so that you're not pushed around. And that part of us that thinks it should have all the answers already, investigate. And then it's much easier to stop doing stuff all the time and watch what happens. And then there is this possibility in the human being, this radical dissolution, dissolving, ending, of the willingness to do anything by aggression, by ideology. And the willingness to keep finding out that there is a way. Knowing that I don't know, we humans can find our way. We keep finding a way. It's not like, oh, I don't use aggression, so I can't deal with that. It's like, yeah, I can't deal with that, but there's a way without aggression. So thank you for listening. May our practice and our lives be dedicated to the momentum towards liberation everywhere.